the makeover. The little table had been moved to the center, and it was covered with crayons, pens, and half-finished drawings instead of our random knickknacks, which were dumped in the old basket. Abby pointed to one of the drawings in progress and grinned. A group of cats in a pillow fort on the moon, roasting marshmallows over a candle. We waited, listening for movement on the other side of the blanket, but everything seemed quiet. Abby crept out of the fort.
"Hi," said a cheery voice. "Are you my magical pen pal?"
I jumped, nearly knocking over the table, and peeked out. Kelly was sitting up in bed. It looked like she'd been waiting for us. Abby kept her cool. "Yes to the second part, no to the first," she said, getting to her feet. "I'm not magical, although the forts might be. No one's really sure. My name's Abby."
"I'm Kelly."
They shook hands.
"I finished your picture."
Kelly held up a drawing of a black-and-white cat floating happily through space. It looked almost exactly nothing like Samson. Abby smiled. "Aw, I love it, thanks."
"You're welcome. Are the other people here?"
"Yep," said Abby, waving for me to come out. "This is Maggie. She's the other people."
"Hello,"
I said.
"Hi."
Kelly didn't seem even the tiniest bit nervous to be meeting two new kids, older kids even, who had just crawled out of her personal private pillow fort. I was impressed.
"So, we're in a hurry, Kelly," said Abby, sitting on the bed.
"But we owe you an explanation for what's been going on. Here's the 1-minute version." Abby told Kelly everything. Building the forts, discovering the links, Alaska, the council, the attack, how our parents reacted, all of it. Kelly listened, her eyes growing wider and wider.
"And Dr. Hetzker?"
she said, turning to me when Abby was finished.
"She's your mom? Weird."
"Not that weird," I said. "Your fort's linked in because my mom took some crimping scissors from my fort and gave them to you."
"Oh, those are yours?"
said Kelly.
"Do you want them back?"
"No, thanks," I said. "They were actually my mom's, but they're yours now. They're your token. If we took those scissors out of your fort, we wouldn't be able to visit you at all anymore," explained Abby. "It's having the scissors here that makes it possible. That's what token means."
"This is all pretty confusing," said Kelly.
"It is," agreed Abby. "And if you want, we can go over all of it again once we rescue Maggie's Uncle Joe."
"And Uncle Joe needs a doctor," I said, walking over to the door. "Which is why we're here to get my mom."
I had my hand on the doorknob when Kelly shouted.
"Stop!" she said. "You can't go out there! You don't know where she is! You'll get in trouble with the doctors!"
"Oh, she's right, Mags," said Abby. "There are probably lots of grown-ups wandering around, and we're not exactly supposed to be here."
"But we have to find her," I insisted.
I was getting more and more anxious by the second. How long had it been since I'd left Uncle Joe all on his own? We'd been wasting time. "And we will," said Abby. "But we need a plan."
"What about this?"
Kelly pulled a push button on a cord off the wall beside her.
"It's my emergency button. I'm only supposed to use it for big emergencies, but this probably counts. Dr. Hetzker should be who answers it."
"Perfect," said Abby. "You're good at plans, Kelly. But what should we say when she shows up? How are we going to convince her to get in the fort?"
"We'll just have to wing it," I said.
"We've got to do this. Ready?" Kelly grinned and pressed the emergency button. 12 seconds later, my mom burst through the door.
"Kelly, what is..."
"Maggie!" she goggled, spinning from me to Kelly holding the emergency button to Abby, who waved, and back to me again.
"What do you think you're doing here? You're supposed to be at home. You're supposed to be grounded."
I opened my mouth, but she cut me off. "No, never mind. You can explain later." She crossed to the bed and put a hand on Kelly's shoulder.
"I'm so sorry about this, Kelly, but I'm proud of you for using the button and calling for help."
"I wasn't calling for help," said Kelly.
"You weren't?"
"No," said Kelly. "I pressed the button so you'd come to Alaska with us." I looked at Abby in surprise. "When did we say Kelly was coming with us? Apparently she had some plans of her own."
"That sounds like a nice game," said my mom. but this isn't a good time for games.
It's not a game, Ms. H, said Abby.
My mom's jaw tightened. That is enough, Abigail. You two are going to leave, now. And Kelly is going to get some rest, and there's nothing more to say.
What if I do this? Said Kelly, and she jumped out of bed. Hey, said my mom as Kelly shoved her feet into a pair of hospital slippers and pattered over to the fort.
Abby whooped. I shook my head.
This little girl had some serious nerve, and if she felt well enough to decide she was going to come along, I wasn't going to stop her.
Head through the link, Kelly, I called as she disappeared into the entrance.
Then take the second pillow to the right and straight on to Alaska.
Stop it, said my mom, crossing to the fort. Kelly, come out of there, sweetie. You can play in your fort later.
There was no reply. She's not in there anymore, said Abby. We told you. She's on her way to Alaska.
I said, stop it. This is absolutely not a game, girls.
My mom looked more upset than I'd ever seen her. She ducked inside the fort.
Get the door,
hissed Abby, following my mom. I bolted for the door and locked it, turning off the lights for good measure, and scrambled after them just as my mom cried out.
Holy, what is this?
Hey, keep it moving, Ms. H, said Abby, bumping into her from behind. Just follow the open links.
We crowded into Fort McFortersen just in time to hear Kelly say,
Whee!
As she tumbled through the pillow to Uncle Joe's.
My mom stopped dead and stared around open-mouthed.
But this is your... Oh, where in...
Yes, yes, I said. It's the fort in our living room. But right now we're heading to Uncle Joe's place up in Alaska. He needs our help.
Joe?
Joe, your little brother, yes. Come on, Mom.
Coaxing and tugging, we finally got my mom through the forts, past the stomach-churning link, and out into Uncle Joe's cabin, where Kelly was running out the front door in her bathrobe and slippers.
Kelly, wait! You'll freeze! I called.
I'm on it, said Abby, pulling a pair of jackets from the closet and running after her. I turned to my mom. Her eyes were spinning between the fort and the cabin and the wind-swept tundra outside. She looked completely bewildered. I grabbed her shoulders with both hands and prepared to take control of the situation.
Mom, I said, I know this is confusing, but take a deep, slow breath, remember? I need you to listen to me.
We both looked around as heavy feet thudded up the front steps, and Matt came tromping in.
About time, he said. It stopped raining, but he's still out cold.
What are you doing here? Said my mom.
The same as you, Ms. H. Rescue mission.
But, my mom sputtered.
Mom?
I was worried I would have to slap her face. But her eyes locked onto me like I was holding out a lifeline.
Mom, we're in Uncle Joe's cabin in Alaska. I found him out on the shore a little while ago, unconscious and hurt. He needs your help.
Her eyes were scanning side to side as I spoke.
Joe, what? But how?
There's no time to explain, but my friends and I can travel between our pillow forts, and that's how we got here, and this is an emergency, so follow me.
I pulled her to the door, Matt right behind us.
She gasped as the cold air hit her and stopped, staring out at the Arctic sky and waves and shore. I was already running down the steps.
Straight ahead!
I called over my shoulder. And then my mom saw them. Abby, Mark, and Kelly gathered around the crumpled heap that was Uncle Joe. She gave a cry, and before I could take another two steps, she was sprinting past me, a blur in her purple hospital scrubs, tearing across the rain-slicked rocks to rescue her little brother.
21. Have you moved him at all? My mom asked, crouching down beside Uncle Joe and pressing a hand to his face.
No, said Mark and Matt as I jogged up. We thought that wouldn't be safe.
My mom ran her hands gingerly along Uncle Joe's twisted leg, then exhaled hard and turned to us, her face pale but relieved.
You did the right thing. It's a nasty break. The good news is that otherwise he doesn't seem to be in danger.
Abby spun and flung her arms around me. Matt and Mark gave a cheer.
I squeezed Abby back and exhaled hard into the sky as the cloud of worry and anxiety that had been hovering over us lifted. My mom climbed to her feet.
"Okay, everyone," she said, clapping her hands. "Here's what we're doing. Our number one priority is to get Joe warm, so we need to carry him inside. Gather around and we'll lift him together. I'll keep his leg stable until we can get a splint on it."
Everybody helped, and with a good amount of slipping and straining, we managed to haul Uncle Joe back into the cabin and onto the bed. My mom carefully positioned his leg, then clapped her hands again and gave us all chores. Kelly and Abby went to gather up all the blankets and warm things they could find. Matt and Mark rooted through the cupboards looking for medical supplies, and I boiled water on the stove and made 6 giant mugs of hot cocoa. And even though it was still technically an emergency, it was also pretty fun, with all of us crammed together in the tiny cabin gulping cocoa, digging through drawers and boxes for useful supplies, and shouting when we found them. Abby found a local map under a heavy book on whale anatomy. Kelly discovered a stash of extra blankets at the back of the closet, and Matt pulled a pair of ski poles out from under the bed that my mom decided would be perfect for splints. Amid all the searching, someone bumped the electronic clutter on the desk, and after a few sputtering crackles, the same weird, heavy, soupy, staticky noise I'd heard before began churning into the room. Everyone stopped what they were doing to stare at the speaker. "I'm pretty sure that's the underwater microphone," I told them.
"It's incredible," whispered Matt.
Mark nodded.
"Where are the whales, though?" asked Kelly.
No one answered, and we listened in silence to the gurgling, glooping thunder of the deep, dark water out in the bay. There was a groan from the bed, and the spell was broken.
"He's waking up!"
We all crowded around as Uncle Joe opened his eyes. He looked from one face to another, blinking in the light.
"Joe?" said my mom. "Joe, it's me, Karen. You had a bad fall. You've got a broken leg and probably a concussion."
"Hey, sis," said Uncle Joe faintly. "Nice to see you too."
"How are you feeling?" I asked, leaning over him.
"Hurt,"
said Uncle Joe.
"Who are you?"
I looked at my mom in alarm. "I'm Maggie, your niece."
"Not you, Maggie. You."
He nodded, then grimaced.
"Ouch, guess I shouldn't do that."
I looked over my shoulder. Kelly and the twins were standing behind me.
"Oh, these are friends of ours," I said. "This is Kelly. She's..."
But Uncle Joe's face spasmed, and he gritted his teeth around another groan.
"The shock's wearing off," said my mom, laying a hand on his forehead. "He's starting to feel that broken leg."
"Okay, Joe, we're going to get you to the hospital."
"Which hospital?"
"Mine," said my mom. "Through the pillow forts." It was incredibly bizarre hearing my mom say those words, but everyone took it in stride. Everyone, that is, except Uncle Joe, who shook his head again.
"Ouch," he said. "La la, don't tell me anything. And can't leave Alaska. Lose Grant. Have to stay. Send reports. Be ready. Record whale."
"Joe, that's enough," said my mom. "We're taking you to the hospital, and that's that. You're in no position to argue."
"Your mom sounds just like you," Abby whispered, nudging me.
Uncle Joe frowned and opened his mouth, clearly ready to put up a fight, then grimaced again and shut it. He was trembling.
"Are you in a lot of pain?" asked Kelly.
He gave a tiny nod. She patted his arm. Then her eyes lit up.
"Oh, Dr. Hetzker!"
"Yes, Kelly."
"Why don't we get Joe some emergency pain medicine, like you keep in my room? I can run and get it for him."
"It's kind of you to think of that," said my mom. "But seeing as we're taking him there in a minute anyway..."
"No,"
said Uncle Joe.
"Hospital here. Town not too far."
"He wants to stay, Ms. H," said Matt.
"Stop. It's not safe, kids."
"But shouldn't he get a say?" asked Abby. "He's the one who's injured."
"We'd have a seriously hard time getting him through all those links while he's like this anyway,"
Mark pointed out. My mom bit her lip, considering.
Kelly tugged at her sleeve.
I think he's really hurting, Dr. Hetzker.
My mom gave in. Fine, she said, throwing up her hands. We'll take Joe to this town hospital, but I'll go get the pain medicine from mine.
Do you want help getting back there? I asked.
The last thing we needed was my mom getting lost in the network.
I remember.
Just follow the open links, like you said. She disappeared into the fort, and we waited for an anxious minute before she returned.
Here, she said, holding out a small plastic bottle. I'm not happy about this, but these will help Joe for now.
Thank goodness, said Uncle Joe. I ran to get a glass of water. Great idea, Kelly, said Abby, as I helped Uncle Joe with the medicine. Now, how exactly are we going to get Joe to his hospital?
Why don't we take this truck out back? Called Mark,
pointing at the kitchen window.
Does it run okay, Joe?
Uncle Joe, breathing shallowly, gave a thumbs up.
Cool. Looks like we've got a plan then, said Matt. I can drive. Is everybody... Whoa!
He cut off as the entrance flap of Fort Orpheus billowed dramatically, and Samson appeared, purring like a freight train at the sight of everyone. Creepy frog dangling from his snaggle paw. Samson! Cried Abby. The legend continues.
Well, the gang's all here now, said Mark.
So that's Samson, Kelly said, kneeling down to pet him.
Samson rubbed her fingers with his cheek.
Where did that cat come from? Asked my mom. And what on earth is that thing he's dragging?
He's my cat, said Abby, freeing him from the stuffed animal. He likes to wander through our network, and this is Creepy Frog.
It certainly is, said my mom.
And Samson is very handsome, but we can't afford to get distracted right now. But it was too late for that. As Abby chucked Creepy Frog at me, Samson got caught on Kelly's bathrobe, Matt and Mark started arguing over who was going to drive the truck, and I missed Creepy Frog and knocked over my cocoa. Eventually, we all settled down. But the plan hit a new snag as my mom tried to decide who was going to help deliver Uncle Joe to the hospital. Obviously, everyone wanted to go.
Absolutely not, said my mom, shaking her head over and over. I am not taking you all on a nighttime joyride across the Alaskan tundra. It would be wildly irresponsible of me, both as a parent and a doctor.
But we can't just go home, I said. Not after everything we've done.
Oh, yes, you can, she retorted. And as the only uninjured adult here, I'm ordering you and Abby back home immediately, and Kelly back to the hospital. Matt and Mark, she said, speaking over our objections, will ride in the bed of the truck and look after Joe while I drive.
Sure, Ms. H, said Matt.
But how are you going to know where to go? It's not safe to read a map and drive at the same time.
I'll manage, said my mom. Joe won't fit up front with his splint, and I need two people in the back to stop him from rolling around.
Maggie and I can do that, said Abby, her hand in the air. We can keep him steady. That way the twins can ride up front with you and read the map, and if anything goes wrong in back, I can handle it because I learned all about first aid and stuff at Camp Cantaloupe.
My mom wasn't convinced. Kids, this is a very, very important thing we're about to do. Joe needs serious medical attention, and I'd be better able to help him if I knew you were all safely at home.
We can do it, Ms. H, said Abby. We want to help. Just give us a chance, please.
My mom stared at her for a long moment, then sighed. Fine, she said, but only because this is a real emergency.
What about me?
Asked Kelly. I nodded. Kelly has to come, too.
Whoa, said my mom, raising her hands. Who's the parent here?
Uncle Joe, who'd been keeping quiet, chuckled.
Kelly, no. You are absolutely not coming. It's just not safe. What if you caught a cold or developed a cough?
But I'll be with you, said Kelly. What's safer than being with my doctor?
Being back in the hospital where you belong, said my mom.
She was turning red.
Okay, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm canceling this whole wild circus. Joe, you're coming back to my hospital with Kelly and me.
The rest of you are going to help us carry Joe through the pillow forts, then get yourselves home and stay there. No argument, no discussion.
We'd only just started arguing and discussing when Uncle Joe sat halfway up and shouted,
"Hey! Everybody quiet!"
In the ringing silence that followed, a long, sweet, ghostly noise filled the cabin, rising and falling like a bird on the air. It was coming from the underwater speaker. The hair on the back of my neck stood up.
"What is that?"
whispered the twins.
"Whale song," said Uncle Joe, his eyes wide.
"It's Orpheus. He's here.
You!"
He pointed to Mark.
"Hit record on the receiver, quick!"
Mark scrambled over to the table and pressed a button on the ancient machine. Uncle Joe let out a breath and lay back.
"Oh, wow, finally. You have no idea how cool. Might be the first people to ever hear this."
The song coiled around us, eerie and beautiful. I turned to look out the window, shivering at the thought of that huge, warm body slipping through the icy water just offshore.
"Orpheus," said Uncle Joe, "you are not alone, buddy."
He looked like he might cry. He turned to my mom.
"That settles it. I'm not going back to Seattle. I've waited my whole life for this moment."
My mom gazed around at our circle of rebellious faces. Samson hopped off the desk and crossed the room to sit daintily at Kelly's feet. My mom sighed.
"I suppose he's coming too, is he?"
she said. Samson purred. 22. It took another full half hour to gather ourselves together and actually get on the road. The main problem was Uncle Joe, who flatly refused to leave while Orpheus was singing unless we could find some way to bring the radio. It was becoming a real argument when the twins found a set of official-looking walkie-talkies in the cutlery drawer in the kitchen.
"If we tape one handset down to talk and set it near the speaker, you should be able to hear the radio for a few miles at least," said Matt. Uncle Joe was thrilled.
Soon the cocoa cups were piled in the sink, the back of the truck was toweled dry and loaded up with blankets, and we were carrying Uncle Joe awkwardly down the steps into the growing twilight. The wind was still going strong, roaring in off the bay and pushing the last of the clouds back to reveal a sky already twinkling with stars. The twins settled Uncle Joe in the bed of the truck, and Kelly, Abby, Samson, and I piled in around him. My mom fussed over all of us, adjusting hats and tucking in blankets, then got behind the wheel as Mark climbed into the passenger seat and opened the map. Matt ran back to the cabin to lock up and turn off the lights, then hopped over the tailgate beside Kelly.
"Wait," Abby said, jumping up from her seat beside me. "Here, take my spot."
"There's room on this side," said Matt.
"No," Abby insisted, stepping over Uncle Joe and cutting him off. "Not a chance. I want to sit next to Kelly and Samson. You sit next to Maggie."
I could have died. She was being so obvious, but no one else seemed to notice. I was incredibly grateful for the cold wind giving me an excuse to be pink in the face as Matt settled into the nest of blankets beside me. He took up more room than Abby. Our knees were almost touching. Oh, cantaloupe.
"Well, this is pretty sweet,"
Matt said, turning to me with a huge smile.
"I get to ride with the lady in charge."
I smiled back as best I could and flatly refused to catch Abby's eye.
"Okay," said my mom, sliding open the little window between the cab and the back of the truck. "All set back there?"
"Yes,"
we chorused.
"I have to go to the bathroom," called Uncle Joe.
My mom groaned.
"Ha! Just kidding,"
everyone laughed.
"Then if we're ready to act like grown-ups,
here we go,"
said my mom. She turned the key, the engine roared to life, and we were off. The icy Arctic air whipped over us as the truck sped along, and I was instantly grateful for the mountain of coats and blankets my mom had insisted on bringing. Matt cinched the hood of his jacket tight and threw another blanket over our laps. Abby leaned forward, patting Uncle Joe's arm.
"How you hanging in there?" she hollered over the wind. Uncle Joe gave a thumbs up, waving the walkie-talkie. Kelly was riding with her head thrown back, gazing up at the dark sky and gleaming stars from her little cocoon of warmth. Her eyes shone. I could just see Samson and Creepy Frog snuggled in her lap. She spotted me watching and waved. I grinned and waved back. Up in the cab, I saw Mark shake out the map and say something to my mom. She laughed, her ponytail bouncing. She looked happier than I'd seen her in a long time, and I felt a sudden rush of affection for her. Somehow, she actually fit in on this adventure. She made it complete. Mark spread the map over the dashboard, studying it, then pointed to the left. My mom nodded and spun the wheel sharply, pointing the nose of the truck down as we curved around a line of hills. Everyone in the back looked up at the turn, and everyone saw it, and everyone shouted. But it was too late. We were leaving the stars and the wind behind. We were driving into a solid wall of fog. There was no time to turn. The hills held the heavy gray cloud between them like a sea, and our path went right through it. Within seconds, we were swallowed whole. My mom slammed on the brakes, bringing the truck to a bouncing stop. We stared around, but the fog threw the headlights back, reflecting only shining whiteness. The wind was gone, and the damp, clammy cold crept into the truck, finding every gap in our defenses. Abby pulled her hat down over her ears. Kelly disappeared completely under her blankets. "I'm going to have to take this super slowly, everyone," my mom called from the front, easing the truck into a crawl. "There's no point trying to go back, but if we're lucky, we'll come out of this soup soon." Mark had the map inches from his face. "It looks like we should be okay," he said. "This is only a sort of valley between the hills. Once we're through, we won't be that far from town." "But how long will it take to get through?" asked Matt. "At this speed, it could be hours." "We don't have a choice," said my mom. "We can't risk hitting something if we're going fast. Everybody just sit tight." She was doing her best to sound optimistic, but I could hear the worry in her voice. "How you doing back there, Joe?" she called.
"I'm okay, sis," he called back. "I am okay."
Now that we were moving quietly, I could hear faint sloops and ewes from the walkie-talkie. It looked like Orpheus was still singing.
"Well, keep it up," said my mom. "We'll be at the hospital before you know it."
We crawled forward, the only sound the crunch of the tires on the rocky ground and the occasional blip of whale song. On, and the fog got deeper. I felt a gnawing in my stomach, an uneasy mix of worry and plain old hunger. It had been a long time since I'd eaten. I wondered how the others were doing. Without the stars and the wind and the thrill of speed, our rescue mission was a lot less fun. No one was smiling now. All sense of time slipped away. We might have been inching along for hours. I was starting to wonder if we were moving at all when Mark shouted an alarm and the truck stopped with a jolt. "What the?" said Abby. But looking ahead, I could see exactly what. My mom had hit the brakes only just in time. The truck's front bumper was inches from a wall of rubble right across our path. "Darn it," said my mom. "There must have been a landslide." She hit the steering wheel in frustration, catching the horn with her fist. The tinny beep sounded small and forlorn in the shrouded landscape. "Here there be margins," Abby said under her breath. I managed a weak smile.
"Can't we turn and follow alongside the slide?" asked Matt.
"We can try," said Mark, his head bent over the map. "But which way? The slide's right across our path, and there's no way of knowing if taking a left or right will get us around it faster." My mom turned off the engine.
"Why stopped?"
asked Uncle Joe sleepily.
"Are we there?"
"No, Joe," said Abby. "Not yet. We're just taking a quick break." Uncle Joe mumbled something unintelligible and closed his eyes.
"What do we do now?"
asked Kelly in a small voice. Nobody answered. I could feel Matt shivering beside me. The seconds ticked by. What were we going to do? We could always wait for day and hope the sun would burn away the fog, but how far off would that be? And what sort of condition would Uncle Joe, or any of us, be in when it came?
Shame,
mumbled Uncle Joe. What, Joe? Asked my mom. Uncle Joe shook the walkie-talkie.
Out of batteries.
Oh. Silence fell over the group again. The silence grew. I could almost hear everybody thinking. Finally, my mom spoke.
Okay, what if we...
Shh! Hissed Abby. What's that? We froze, listening, and I heard it. A steady crunching. The crunching of footsteps over the rocks. Something large, something heavy, was moving out in the fog. I sat up straight, my eyes wide and my ears trained on whatever was out there as it came nearer and nearer, circling, closing in on us. Stalking, said an unhelpful voice in my head. I shivered. It suddenly occurred to me how very exposed we were, sitting there in the open back of the truck, ready to be picked off one by one. There was a sharp crack of rock breaking, then a grumbling snort. What animal snapped rocks just by walking? Maybe it was a woolly mammoth. Maybe it was the last woolly mammoth in the world, and it had been lost in the Arctic, forced to become carnivorous to survive. Maybe it was sniffing us out, trying to decide which of us to yank into the air with its trunk and devour first. Maybe it had settled on me. Maybe I was about to see the inside of a woolly mammoth's belly again, only this time without the pillows. I hoped I at least got a look at it first. There! Hissed Mark, pointing, and everyone gasped as an enormous shape appeared barely 10 feet away, then vanished again into the mist. On the count of three, said my mom in a loud whisper, I'm going to blow the horn. Maybe it'll go away. We all nodded. One. The crunching came closer. Two. There was a huffling, muffled snort. Wait, said Matt. Look! And it emerged out of the fog like a ship on the sea. Dark eyes, a huge furry body, four massive legs, jaws that could crush us like grapes, and antlers, enormous antlers parting the mist before them. It came right up to the back of the truck and stopped. It was a moose, a gargantuan moose of mammoth proportions. I'd always pictured moose as being kind of funny, but now, with one standing over me, its huffing nostrils adding to the fog and its antlers scraping the sky, the only word I could think of was run.
Everyone, my mom said out of the side of her mouth. Keep very, very still.
We did. The moose stared down at us and blinked.
Hey, Joe, breathed Abby. What do we do?
Uncle Joe gave a little snore. He was fast asleep. That thing could flip over the truck just by shaking its head, Ms. H, whispered Mark. We have to get out of here.
I agree,
my mom whispered back.
But how? I can't drive over this wall of rocks, and I can't back up with that thing standing there. We have to make it move somehow.
Let's try and scare it, said Mark. You honk the horn, and we'll hit it with something. What do we have that we can throw?
No, don't, I said. What were they all talking about? The moose wasn't hurting anybody, it was just standing there.
As far as we knew, it could even be here to help us find our way out of the fog, like the ghost moose in those stories Abby brought home from Camp Cantaloupe. I looked back up at our new friend, my heart thudding, but not from fear anymore.
There's a toolbox in the back here, Matt said, fumbling under the blankets.
He pulled out a solid-looking wrench and passed it through the window to Mark, then grabbed a hammer for himself.
Okay, on three. You honk the horn, Ms. H., and we'll throw.
He shared a grim nod with his brother.
Aim for between the eyes.
Wait! I said, horrified. You can't! Abby, tell them! Abby looked around, startled.
Huh? Tell them what?
That it's here to rescue us! It's obviously the ghost moose from Camp Cantaloupe. The moose coughed. See, I said. It knows the name. What I could see of Abby's forehead wrinkled. Her eyes traveled up to the moose, then back to me.
Mags, you know that was just a story, right?
But you believed it. I know you did. You've barely stopped talking about it since you got back.
Yeah, 'cause it's funny, said Abby.
And because I thought maybe you'd be into it with your games and all, and maybe not be grumpy about me being gone.
I didn't actually believe the ghost story part of it, obviously.
And even now there's an actual ghost moose standing over us. I waved a hand at it. An actual ghost moose as large as life. You still don't believe that it's real?
Abby pulled her hat down over her eyebrows. Max, that doesn't even make sense, she said. It's just a wild animal.
I looked around for support. Was I the only one who thought this moose might actually be a good thing?
My mom was shaking her head. Mark wouldn't meet my eye. Matt quirked his mouth to one side and shrugged.
Is it a friendly ghost moose?
Asked a tiny voice from inside Kelly's cocoon.
Yes, I said. Thank you, Kelly. It's very friendly. That's how the story goes anyway.
I shot Abby a look.
It saves campers when they're lost in the woods.
Kelly peered out, her face just visible.
We're lost, she said.
She looked so small and hopeful in that moment that I couldn't stand it, and a hot spark of anger burned to life inside me. Who cared if it was just a story? Who cared if believing it didn't make any sense? This was what was happening. If I'd had my way, we'd have been rescued by a helicopter full of secret agent librarians headed for their base in a nearby volcano. But the ghost moose of Camp Cantaloupe was what we got. And I'd eat a whole pan of cucumber casserole before I let this chance pass us by. I smiled at Kelly, my heart fluttering a little at what I was about to do. That's right, I said, putting my shoulders back. We are, but not for long. The music started. I pushed my nest of blankets aside. I stood up. Everyone gasped. The mist parted, billowing around me as I planted my feet, my head held high. I stood taller than the others, taller than the cab of the truck, taller than the hills around us, taller than the sky. The reflected headlights burned in the air like moonlight, and the vast Arctic night stretched away on all sides. I raised my chin. The fog blew through my hair. Wow, someone breathed behind me. I looked up at the moose. It gazed down, a puzzled sort of interest on its face. For a ghost moose, it sure did smell.
Hello.
Hi, I said to it. What was the proper way to address a ghost moose?
If you're who I think you are and you're here from Camp Cantaloupe, will you please show us the way to town? We're lost, and Uncle Joe is hurt, and Kelly and my mom have to get back to the hospital, and Samson is probably hungry, and we could really use your help.
The moose stayed perfectly still, watching me, mist rolling down its antlers.
So, please? I said, my voice shaking slightly. Will you help us?
I was starting to shiver. I'd been hoping for a grand, dramatic moment. This wasn't exactly going to plan. The moose flicked one ear, then the other.
Sweetie, I don't think... began my mom.
Shh, I said. I was thinking hard. The moose wasn't leaping to our aid, but it wasn't leaving either. Maybe I wasn't doing enough on my own. Maybe the moose needed more. It was a pity we didn't have any cantaloupe lying around. But Abby had said the moose helped lost campers. That was the story. And I was a camper, sort of. Except, no, not really. I'd actually been fighting hard against the whole idea of summer camp since the day Abby left, and even more since she'd tried to bring it back with her. I was a pillow forder, a builder of caves, and doer of missions with the wind blowing through my hair. Abby was the one with the super social summer camp skills, and meeting new people powers, and... oh, my moose nostrils, that was it! Abby was the camp, and I was the pillow fort. And we could only do this by our powers combined. I turned my head. Abby, get up here! I need you!
Abby looked surprised and more than a little wary, but she clambered to her feet and maneuvered her way beside me.
"What are you doing?"
she murmured, eyeing the sharp points of the antlers less than a foot above our heads.
"I think I figured it out," I said. "The moose helps campers, but I'm too much of a pillow forder to count.
It should recognize you, though. What can you do that's cantaloupe-y?"
"Huh? Cantaloupe-y?
You know, something from camp. Is there a song or... Hey, the camp dance!"
"What about it?" said Abby.
"It's perfect," I said. "Do it."
"Now?"
"Of course now. You were all about it the other day. And we need to do something to convince the moose we're campers worth saving. You do it once to show me, then I'll join in. I think we're supposed to do this thing together."
The moose was watching our discussion with interest. Abby paused, and I bit my lip. I could almost hear old Abby and new Abby fighting it out. The thing was, I needed help from both.
"Okay," she said at last. "Fine." I moved back, relieved, as she put her hands on her hips and stepped into a deep lunge. "But this had better work, or I'm gonna feel really silly." And 1, 2, 3, da-da, da-da-da, da-da. It wasn't a complicated dance, and Abby gave it her all, even while wobbling on blankets and trying not to step on Uncle Joe. She kicked, lunged, swayed, and clapped, da-dying along the whole time. "Okay," she said, coming to a halt. "That's the Camp Cantaloupe Dance. Here, Mags." She held out a hand. "Let's try it with both of us." Space was tight, so we wrapped our arms around each other's shoulders. It was nice being huddled up. It took the edge off the cold. We stepped into a deep lunge.
"You all might as well help, too," called Abby, half turning around. "Like Maggie said, maybe we're supposed to do this together."
I glanced back. Matt, Mark, and my mom looked confused. Kelly looked excited. Samson was asleep.
"We can do the singing part," announced Kelly, pushing away the blankets of her cocoon. "I like to sing."
"Okay. 1, 2, 3. Da-da, da-da-da, da-da." And Abby and I danced. It took a few tries to get in sync, but we got there in the end. One by one, the others joined in on the da-dying, and soon Kelly was conducting with Creepy Frog, Mark was drumming with his wrench, and the bed of the truck was bouncing with our kicks and lunges. I had a sudden vision of how weird all this would look to someone out there in the mists. A hodgepodge family of kids, teens, and grown-ups camped out in a pickup truck, putting on a song and dance routine for a dinosaur-sized moose in the middle of the freezing Arctic night. "Cantaloupes," I murmured to myself, squeezing Abby closer for the swaying bit. "We are a total bunch of cantaloupes," I grinned. I wasn't cold at all anymore. Halfway through the fourth round, the moose began to nod its huge nose up and down in time with our dancing. "It's working," panted Abby, and we danced even harder. As the fifth round ended, the moose let out a loud snort, reared up high, its hairy belly stretching over our heads, and brought its hooves back to earth with a crash. More rock shattered. Abby and I froze mid-lunge, and the others stopped singing. The moose snorted again, almost daintily in the silence, then turned and trotted a few steps into the mist. It stopped and looked back, just visible in the reflection from the headlights, waiting.
"Well, that's pretty clear," said Abby, wiping her forehead on her sleeve. "Follow that moose!"
Kelly cheered. Matt and Mark whooped. Samson woke up and yawned. Abby seized me and pulled me into a massive hug. She smelled like wool sweaters and cocoa and my best friend in the whole world. "Cantaloupe, cantaloupe," I said, grinning into her hair.
"Moose, moose, moose," she whispered back.
"Thank you."
"Well done, Maggie and Abby,"
called my mom, starting the engine with a roar as Abby and I flopped back in our seats.
"Well done, everybody."
The tires spun to life against the rocks, and we were off, sliding through the fog with the moose trotting along between the headlights, and everyone patting Abby and me on the back for being so brave. Everything was fun again, and the cold and damp and hunger were all just part of the adventure. Samson stretched out beside Uncle Joe, who had somehow slept through the whole entire thing, and purred even louder than the engine. All at once, the moose picked up speed and broke into a run, disappearing in the clouds ahead. My mom stepped on the gas to follow, and as we zoomed forward, the mist around us thinned, faded, then vanished completely, and we were through. The dream was over. We were out of the valley, and spread out before us in the distance lay the roads and buildings and spangled lights of town. 23. Everything was quiet and still in the local hospital's pastel waiting room, and my head jerked up for the 100th time as I fought to stay awake. Abby and Kelly were already asleep, curled up together on one of the couches, with Samson hiding in a bundle of blankets between them. Matt and Mark slumped in their chairs, watching the silent TV on the wall and passing yawns back and forth. There was no one else around. Even the receptionist at the desk had gone for the night, and apart from Abby's snores, it was perfectly still. I was just giving in to the heavy pull behind my eyes when my mom arrived. I shook Abby and Kelly awake, and they sat up, yawning, crinkling the pile of wrappers from our Rescue Mission Snack Committee raid on the hospital vending machines. All right, my mom said, dropping into a chair. Joe's going to be fine. It was a clean break, so no worries about long-term damage to his leg. And he's got a mild concussion, but they say that'll be fine, too. She looked around at us, bleary-eyed and rumpled. You're all real heroes. Did they ask who we were? Said Abby. Yes, I said we were tourists on a family trip. And they believed that? I eyed my mom's purple scrubs and the oversized coats and sweaters the rest of us were wrapped in. We didn't exactly look like tourists. I think so, said my mom. I told them we needed to do laundry and were down to our emergency backup outfits. Maybe they bought it, I don't know. Most doctors are used to seeing unusual things. This is the quietest hospital I've ever been in, said Kelly. I know, it's weird, isn't it? Said my mom. But it's also the biggest one for miles. For half the size of Texas, one of the doctors told me, whatever that means. It's downright tiny compared to what I'm used to. But if they make Joe better, then it's the best hospital in the world. Did you tell them about the moose? I asked. Before everyone quieted down, we'd been debating whether our rescuer had been an actual ghost moose or just a friendly real one. Mark said it was probably a real one, since we'd been able to hear it walking on the rocks, and I'd had to admit I could smell it. But Abby kept pointing out how it had been there 1 minute and gone the next as soon as we reached town, and no one could come up with an answer for that. My mom nodded. I mentioned it, but the nurses insisted they don't have moose up here this time of year. Ha! See? Said Abby, waving Creepy Frog in triumph.
Maybe they don't, said Kelly.
But we do.
Abby high-fived her.
What happens now? Asked Matt. If Joe's gonna be okay, should we all just head home?
Definitely, said my mom. I'm exhausted, and I don't even want to think what's going on back at my hospital. My shift was almost over when you came to get me, but Kelly's supposed to be in her room, and we've been gone for hours and hours. I locked the door and turned off the lights, I said. We thought that might help. Yeah, I saw that when I went back for those pain meds for Joe. And it might, if I can convince my colleagues we were telling ghost stories or holding a seance or something. Kelly giggled. My mom ran a hand over her eyes. But what I don't see is how we're going to get home anytime soon. Even with the sun coming up, it's a long drive back to the cabin. Dude! If only we had a token with us, said Abby, slapping the sofa. There are plenty of pillows. We could have built a fort and linked straight home from here. Why didn't we think of that before? I said. I was off my game. Keeping an emergency backup token around should have been obvious.
Hey, so I'm not sure I get what you two are saying, said Mark. But is there a chance you're wishing for something like this?
He dug around in his pocket and pulled out our map of Camp Pillow Fort. Abby and I stared at him.
What? Where did you get that?
I picked it up in Maggie's fort earlier, said Mark. I thought a map might come in handy during a rescue mission.
That is seriously good thinking, said Abby. All right, let's get to work.
We didn't need a fancy fort, and after a quick planning meeting run by Kelly, who was the only one with experience building forts in hospitals, we settled on a simple half circle of pillows around one of the sofas. Abby threw her blanket over the top, Matt placed the map inside, and just to be safe, we all counted to 10.
Is that it?
Asked Matt. That's it, I said.
You're not scared it might have accidentally linked to a laser-eyed wild boar reserve or something, Mags?
Asked Abby, elbowing me.
Ha, you're funny.
I elbowed her back. She was teasing, but it was nice to realize that I actually wasn't expecting things to go wrong here. For the first time in a while, I was pretty certain everything was going to turn out all right.
It should be good to go, I said. Who's first?
Kelly first, said my mom. Then me.
Cool. Okay, Kelly, off you. Wah!
I wasn't the only one who yelled as a loud clamoring suddenly erupted inside the fort. It sounded like a room full of people having an argument. One voice rose above the others.
I'm dealing with it. I am dealing with it.
We all jumped back as a sandy-haired kid wearing silver sunglasses materialized out of the brand new entrance.
What? How? Murray?
Oh, it is you, said Murray, pushing his shoulders through the gap and propping himself up on his elbows.
It's wonderful to see you, Maggie, but honestly, would you please stop breaking every rule we have? Building new forts, adding links left and right, telling adults? I know you've declared an official emergency, but you are becoming a total menace.
My mouth was hanging open.
But we only just built... How did you find...
How did I find you? Murray said.
I'm captain of the Northern and Arctic Alliance. You're on my turf, and causing a lot of confusion among my membership, I might add. They think we're being invaded, eh?
Maggie, said my mom.
Who is this boy,
and why is he wearing sunglasses at night?
Everyone, this is Murray, I said. He's head of the Pillow Fort Networks for this area, and on the Council of Nefafa. They all wear silver sunglasses.
What on earth is the Council of Nefufu?
Asked Matt. They're the ones who messed up our homes, said Abby. She was glaring at Murray. They deliberately got us in trouble just because we weren't following the rules of their silly club. I looked at Abby in surprise. She'd been all excited about joining Nefafa before. Maybe those hours of backbreaking work in the rat-infested alley had changed her mind.
Hey, said Murray.
There's no need to go insulting Nefafa. You're talking about one of the most respected Pillow Fort organizations in the world.
Really?
Said Mark. It is actually pretty cool, I said. And historical. Marilyn Monroe and Aretha Franklin were members.
Don't forget Alex Trebek, said Murray.
He's Canadian, you know, I told the others.
Neat,
said Matt.
This is the strangest conversation I've ever been a part of, said my mom.
Murray gave a sudden start.
Oh, hang on. Someone's got my foot.
He disappeared into the fort, then stuck his head out again.
A friend wants to say hi, Maggie.
He retreated, and the head and shoulders of another boy appeared in the link.
Hi, Maggie! Maggie!
Bobby, I said, grinning. Good to see you.
You too.
Bobby reached out and grasped my hands.
How have you been? Murray says you've been breaking rules and having adventures. Everyone's been talking about it.
Really?
Really?
He smiled around at the others.
Hi, Maggie's people. I'm Bobby.
Everyone waved and said hi back.
You all know Maggie's a superstar, right?
He went on.
Because she is. She's brave and curious and wonderful. And you're so lucky to have her as your leader.
Abby made a high-pitched noise in her throat and gripped my arm. The others all turned to me, beaming. Bobby was still holding my hands. My face burned hotter than the roof tiles at noon.
Everybody already knows that,
called a muffled voice from inside the makeshift fort. Abby made the noise again and squeezed my arm tighter as Murray pushed his way in beside Bobby.
I mean, you do, right?
He asked, flashing his sunglasses at the group. Obviously, said Abby. The twins grinned. Kelly and my mom patted me on the back. Oh, my woolly mammoth. I had to put a stop to this. What exactly do you want, Murray? I said. We're kind of in a hurry here.
Ah, you're busy with business, said Bobby, releasing my hands. I'll get out of the way then. I just had to come say hello. So hello, and goodbye. Goodbye, Maggie and Maggie's people. See you all soon.
And blowing kisses to each of us in turn, he backed into the fort and disappeared. There was an outbreak of giggling. I kept my focus on Murray, flatly refusing to catch Abby's eye.
Okay, yes.
Business, Murray said. He cleared his throat.
Now that I've made sure it's you, the reason I'm here is to tell you that given the, well, mess you two have made of the Nefafa application process, the council has decided to cut your trial period short. Your time's up, and we're voting tomorrow. Or later today, I guess, if you want to get technical.
What? Abby said. You can't do that!
I'm really sorry, Maggie, said Murray, and he looked like he meant it. But we can. There's a lot going on with the council right now, what with Noriko aging out next month, and to be honest, we just want this over.
We're going to get in, though, right? I said. We rescued Uncle Joe. That should be more than enough.
It should be, said Murray. But we'll have to wait and see. If your official emergency really is finished, the best thing you can do now is get back where you belong and stay there.
Samson, who'd been sleeping through all the excitement in his bundle of blankets, sat up and yawned, stretching luxuriously. He hopped down, sauntered over to the fort, and sniffed Murray's face.
Hello, said Murray. You'll be the director of Camp Pillowfort, eh? Do you have anything to say on behalf of your network?
Samson head-butted Murray's chin and pushed past him into the fort.
That means he likes you, said Abby.
Sorry, did you say director? Asked my mom.
Samson's the director of our network, I said. He won the vote.
And that's causing all sorts of other problems, said Murray. Ben keeps pointing out that according to the Nefafa Charter, council seats have to be held by the highest-ranking member of each regional group. Which means if you all get voted in, the seat is technically Samson's. And that's just not going to work. Not only is Misha super allergic to cats, but where exactly are we supposed to find sunglasses that would fit his little kitty face?
That got a happy laugh from Kelly, but her laugh turned into a cough, and my mom instantly snapped into doctor mode.
Okay, kids, she said, clapping her hands. No more nonsense. I'm taking Kelly back to her room right now, and I mean now. Murphy, or whatever your name is, you do not want to be in my way here.
Yes, ma'am, said Murray. I've got places to be, too.
He lowered his sunglasses and looked at me.
Maggie, I don't know what's going to happen with the council, but one way or another you'll hear from us sometime tomorrow morning. West Coast time. For now, I'm counting on you to please get everyone back where they're supposed to be, and make sure you close this fort off after you.
Got it.
See you soon, I hope.
Murray waved goodbye and started backing up, then stopped. He seemed to be struggling with himself. Before I could ask what was wrong, he raised a hand and blew a kiss right to me, and only me. Turned fire engine red and vanished into the fort. Abby made the noise again. One by one we headed back,
First Kelly, then my mom, then Abby. I held out a hand for Matt to go ahead of me, and got one of his dazzling smiles in return.
Thanks for letting me tag.